should know who I am, but you should know why I'm here. My grandpa, Stephen, is an author of a new exciting play called When the Break Happened in Orangeburg County. It's about our ancestors from when the break happened in 1865 until now. Many of my relatives are featured in the play, from my great-great-great-grandpa Stephen to my great-great-grandpa Stephen to my great-grandpa Stephen to my grandpa Stephen. Guess what my uncle and cousin's name are? Stephen. Go to www.thebreakinorangeburg.com to learn more. An online store has been created to honor those relatives and other families with products featuring the Break logo. Go to www.thebreakstore.com to purchase items today and help to produce this play. Please!
Welcome to a new podcast show about stuff. It's the show about stuff, the Stephen Davis Show. Here's your host, Stephen Davis.
Hi, welcome to the show about stuff, the Stephen Davis Show. Today I have four wonderful sisters, the magnificent McBroom sisters, Marsha, Dana, Lorelei, and Durga. Welcome!
Hi!
You're very well.
Good to be here.
Thank you.
Durga, you're out in California. How's the weather out in California?
The last couple of days, we've had some very torrential storms that have caused some very problematic mudslides up in the mountains in a lot of areas, and hail in the San Fernando Valley, which is quite unusual. But aside from some real heavy downpours in my neighborhood, it's sunny now at the moment. So we're lucky.
Now, in order to start our adventure, I'm going to let each one of you all talk about yourselves, and we're going to start at the eldest, whoever that might be, since you all look the same age.
Marsha is the eldest. I am the eldest.
Oh, you?
Yes.
She paid the cost to be the boss.
Okay, Marsha, you start off. Tell us about yourself.
Okay, I'd like to start off by saying I'm very happy to be here with some of my sisters on the podcast. And we've had a very eclectic and unusual life, all of us, I must say. And I started off as one of the pioneer African-American dark-skinned models in the 70s. And that was quite a big deal. But even before that, I was dancing with Catherine Dunham, with my sister Dana. We danced at the Metropolitan Opera House at the Old Met and the New Met.
Oh, wow.
At Lincoln Center in Aida, which Miss Dunham choreographed. And then Miss Dunham took me to Paris for 6 months to dance in a musical comedy called Deux Anges Sont Venus. I learned a little French there, which has come in quite handy over the years. And then I ended up doing some movies. So my big movie was Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, and I played the part of Petronella Danford, who was a drummer in an all-girls rock group, and that was directed by Russ Meyers. It was very interesting because when I look back at that movie, it was very progressive in the sense that, one, it was a girls rock trio, and then here I end up with two sisters who end up as real rock singers, and then my oldest son, Jeremiah Hosea, is a bass player. So I thought that was really funny that I play the part of a drummer in a movie. I end up with a son who's actually a musician in real life, and my two little sisters ending up with the voices of life singing around the world. It's funny how art, life imitates art, and art imitates life, and it's all interconnected. I then ended up dancing in Israel for 4.5 months in Jesus Christ Superstar with Norman Jewison. So we were in the Negev Desert and all over the country doing that film for 4.5 months. And then I ended up doing a few other films, Comeback Charleston Blue, Legend of Nigger Charlie with Fred Williamson, the football player. They go along in the Traveling All-Stars.
She was the love interest for Billy Dee Williams.
I want to ask you a question before you go on. How did it feel when you first met Catherine Dunham?
Wow. She's our surrogate mother, actually, because we had a lot of contact in the sense that I actually lived with her in Carbondale when she had a house out there. She had sent me out to teach her technique because she was working with young people to get them into Southern Illinois University. So with Miss Dunham, it wasn't just learning her dance, but it was a whole philosophy in terms of a lifestyle, a way of living. It was so beautiful. It really was very special for Danner and myself.
I want to add to that because our coming into her dance and into her technique happened in a very funny way. My mother, Marie McBroom, who went to Juilliard School of Music and was the first accompanist for Harry Belafonte, by the way.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah. And she was also secretary to W.E.B. Du Bois as well. But I had just gone with my mother to Catherine Dunham's office that she had at the Chelsea Hotel. She was living there and giving classes. And I just went with my mother. My mother was going to talk over the tour of the company and how she was going to book their tour because she had a travel agency. I was just waiting in the anteroom of her office while my mother was meeting with Catherine Dunham. And her assistant, Lucille Ellis, came out and threw some leotards at me and said, a class is getting ready to start. She said, your mother's gonna be a while, get in that class. That was the beginning of the saga. I think I went in and then my mother said she had two daughters and Marcia came and we started taking class. We both took to it so well. She gave us scholarships to the school and then she opened a school on 42nd Street. And that was an experience. When she opened that school, Miss Dunham was also a voodoo priestess. She invited voodoo priests from Haiti. She invited santeros from Cuba, Arsenio Rodriguez, the blind guitarist. It was incredible. And all the musicians, and they did the whole killing of the guinea fowl and the singing, but it went on all through the night into the next day. It was quite just a total immersion into Afrocentric culture and music. The people that we met there that came through the Dunham School were absolutely incredible. Marlon Brando just wanted to be there to work her elevator so he could be around the school. She discovered Eartha Kitt. It was quite an exciting thing. As a matter of fact, she had me go on the road. She did a show with Eartha. I think Eartha's last big musicals that she did. It was called Peg, which took after Peg of My Heart. We went on the road with Eartha and she introduced us to some tremendous people, but this was all through my mother. My mother was always into something.
I'll never forget my sweet 16 party. Miss Dunham had Arsenio Rodriguez and Charlie Mingus play at my sweet 16. And I was like, oh my God, why do I have these old men playing for me? And Miss Dunham said, you'll one day have Charlie Mingus and Arsenio Rodriguez playing for you. Your sweet 16.
Charlie Mingus had a big crush on my mother. I remember seeing him running outside in the dead of winter, chasing my mother down the block, begging her to just please talk to him. My mom was something else.
I knew his son a long time ago. He used to live on the east side. I used to go over to his house for something. I don't remember what it was because as you get old, you start to forget things. Yeah. But what I wanted to ask you, and I think that all of you all can join in this question because you all have a common thread in terms of that, is your father. Talk about your father a little bit.
Dr. McBroom, while you were talking, I'm looking at Durga, and because my parents got divorced, but my dad still loved his daughters. And even though he left New York, he had a doctorate that he got at Columbia University. At that time, it was difficult. Even African-American men with PhDs were not as respected as they should be. He went out to Los Angeles. I was just starting junior high school. Marcia and I decided we wanted to spend some time with our dad. So we decided we were running away from home.
Columbia University is where he met our mother, Lorelei and I's mother.
Who was your mother?
McBroom was pretty much credited the first Black American woman with a private cardiology practice in the United States and first woman of any race to do graduate studies in medicine at UCLA. So she was quite the trailblazer.
What a great crew to have on for Women's Month.
Lorelei wanted to get something in here.
I was going to add that Daddy told us he was an assistant to the professor that they both had at Columbia, and that he only had one slot to send one last student to UCLA. And he was trying to decide between our mother, Fletcher Pearl, and this other student who was a white lady. I've forgotten her name now. He said, please send the black one. We need black doctors. My mother had been discouraged prior to medical school to even go into medicine. They told her, oh, you should be a nutritionist. That's what your people need. And she put all that aside. She was very quiet, very studious, straight A student, but she sailed her way through it, crying very often when she'd come home because of the discrimination. There were no women's dorms, none of that. But he was a real rock for her through that period and continued to encourage and support her to becoming an MD.
I'll never forget one time there was a woman who had a cardiac arrest and Pearl brought the woman to. And then when the woman regained consciousness, she looked at her and started yelling, oh my God, what is this black, you know what, doing over me? Am I in hell? Am I in hell? I'll never forget saving someone's life. And then they look at you and start screaming and cursing at you. It was just outrageous.
Yes, they really stood up to and fought through some extreme racism in order for us not to have to fight so hard. And for that, I will be eternally grateful. All of our parents really encouraged us to become people of the world and to travel and to gain the experience that world travel gives you. Not be stuck mentally on the farm as so many people growing up when we did were. And for that, I will be eternally grateful. I just have to point out something, Marcia. Great minds think alike. I'm sitting here looking at my necklace here. Sure. But what I'm wearing is a set that was made by Lorelei. Lorelei makes jewelry.
Yeah.
This is, if you can see, jewelry by Lorelei with the matching earrings here.
Such a talented family.
Lorelei's up next. She needs to tell you about herself.
To say a little more about our father. Because that was your question. Yes. There's so much to tell. I wanted to say that he was a triplet and the other two died. He was considered sickly as a boy and was raised on a farm away from the family until he got stronger. But he was the first in his family to go to college of 13 children. He encouraged and always worked hard to keep his family together. And he did the same thing with us. Even though Marcia and Dana had a different mother, he taught all of us, it doesn't matter who the mother is, you all are brother and sister, because we also have a third set. He had a third wife, Kathy, and she had finally two sons and our little sister, Laura. So that was a really important element to me about his personality, as well as the fact that he had a brilliant mind. Mm-hmm. He knew Eleanor Roosevelt and worked with a group of college students that she had come to the White House, and they remained pen pals after, till many years later. He debated Malcolm X, representing the Martin Luther King philosophy on the Joe Pine radio show. He ran for the Board of Education. He wrote columns. He was a psychologist.
A brilliant orator.
He was supposed to be a speechwriter for Bobby Kennedy because of his ability to write such great speeches, but Bobby was killed.
He was right there in the room when Bobby got killed. I'll never forget Daddy saying a woman came running to the door in a polka dot dress and she said, "We got him." But then the men in black came to my father's house and said, "You did not see that woman. You did not hear what you thought you heard." So Daddy never talked about it publicly till towards the end of his life. But he is quoted in a book that was written about Bobby Kennedy's assassination. And they did quote Daddy for 2 pages in the book.
There is on YouTube an interview he did with Mr. Shelton Walden from WBAI Radio. He did an intense interview about the Robert Kennedy assassination. Between our parents, we feel very blessed. I feel blessed even with our stepmom, because when Marcia and I ran away from home and went to Los Angeles, we were there with Pearl. She was our mother for that time while we were out there. I will never forget when my father passed away, all three wives were at his funeral service. And I said, oh, he has the African ceremony. He's present at the services. It was so loving and so wonderful. We were talking early about my laughing, but that's what my father said. He wanted me to tell a joke to people every day in his name. And he didn't want a service that was indoors. He said he wanted to be out of doors and he didn't want anyone dressed in black. So here we were all on the bluff on the Pacific coast. Everyone's beautifully dressed and people would come, oh, this looks like a great affair. What is it? And I've always said my dad put the fun in funeral.
Where we were, the spot where we were is on Point Doom, which is a promontory out in Malibu. And I chose that spot because according to the Chumash Indian legends, the Chumash were the predominant tribe of this area. There are portals along the coast of California where the veil is thinner so that the spirit can pass through to the other side easily. And one of those portals is in the spot where we had that service, all dressed in African garb, which was quite colorful. And what I was holding up here, you can't see it because of the reflection, but it was a plaque given to our father from the South Central LA and Watts Chamber of Commerce. As he put it in his interview, just following the assassination, when Senator Kennedy was shot, as he put it in his inimitable fashion, people were running around defecating and vomiting on themselves and urinating, so upset. And as a psychologist, he did what he could to calm the crowd and quell the situation. They wrote, in memory of Senator Kennedy, presented to Dr. Marcus McBroom, in memory of Senator Kennedy, your quick action in a time of crisis is a credit to your profession and to the world.
I have to say, my father was such a drama king, and it's beautiful because I think that has helped us all in terms of us as performing artists. He had a smile that would just light up the room when he walked in.
And I must say that during World War II, our father actually worked with Eleanor Roosevelt, because a lot of people aren't aware that our military was still segregated during World War II. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget our sister Laura and myself, we found a little article when we were going through his papers stating that he got injured in Burma because he didn't fight in Europe, he was in Asia during World War II, and he got injured in Burma, and Miss Roosevelt had him flown out because she was fearful for his life from our own troops.
But that wasn't just by chance, because remember what happened, and this is why we're all very spiritually connected. Daddy had a dream the night before that he was supposed to take a helicopter transport out from that place in Burma. He said his dead aunt came to him and told him, don't get on that helicopter.
Wow.
So he pretended to have overslept. And sure enough, 15 minutes after it was up in the air, it exploded in the air. They were planning to bump him off.
Yeah.
Because of his efforts to help with integrating the armed services. It was after that flight blew up that Eleanor sent her own transport to bring him back home.
And that would have been a tragedy for the world, because none of y'all would have been
here.
Another little tidbit about the war. That picture that Dirk is holding up is the house where we grew up in Los Angeles with Daddy. I have a website, and someone was looking for a way to get this letter to me. He was a man who collects historical documents, and he had gotten a hold of a letter that our father had written to the White House specifying that in his training, he was being trained for the military in Mississippi, that they were whipping the soldiers as a punishment. We have a copy of it. It's in my storage in LA. And so he got moved out of there. So that was another thing that he was doing in terms of reporting to Eleanor what was going on and how the Black soldiers were being treated. Because obviously, as we know, anyone who studied any history surrounding race in the World War I and II, because of the segregation, and Vietnam for that matter, it wasn't the same thing about segregation, who was on the front line.
There is an actual book written called The Slaughter, and it tells of a military base in Mississippi where they actually massacred the troops there, the African-American guys, because they came from all over the United States, and the local people thought that they were too uppity. So one night they went in and just massacred everybody and then told their families that they had died in battle overseas.
Just think of this. I grew up in a military family. My father was a lifer then for 30 years. And one of the places that he was stationed at was Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Mm. And in the 50s and 60s, they had a sign as you entering the town that said, help stamp out communism, integration. It was the Ku Klux Klan. On Highway 301 as you came into it. And these were the same soldiers that was going to have to go to Vietnam. This is how they were greeted. So I fully understand what you're saying.
Other issue is that our dad was also at Tuskegee. And in light of what we know that they've done, and everyone's wondering why so many people of color are leery about getting vaccinated now. Of course, the news is out about the Tuskegee experiment, et cetera. But we just have to thank God that my father was not a smoker. He was not a drinker, but he was a man who loved women and women loved him. And he was saved from these experiments because some white woman at Tuskegee took a liking to him and was always running up, throwing her arms around him. So they shipped him out.
Real quick, I want to get back to you all talking about yourselves. Marsha, are you finished talking about yourself?
I did a lot of historical things. For example, I did a lot of album covers when I was a model. So I'm on a cover of Freddie Hubbard's Black Angel. I did two covers for the Stylistics. I did a cover for Lalo Schifrin. Two covers for Van McCoy, who wrote The Hustle. And so I'm on Disco Baby, and then another cover for him. And several magazine covers. I was very excited when I went to the African American Museum in DC. There's a paperback book that I'm on the cover of called The Black Woman. It's a group of essays written by different African American women writers. And that little paperback made it into the museum. So it was very exciting to go to the museum and see that there. I remember yelling and the guard came over, "Oh my gosh, is that you?" And everybody wanted to take pictures. And I know Lorelei and Durga went with Miles, my nephew. And they took a picture by the display.
Not only is it in the museum, it's also on the list that Jada Pinkett Smith just put out as essential reading. I have to say, I've had a wonderful career in entertainment, but a lot of that is due to Marsha, my older sister, my career in entertainment on many levels.
I'm going to get to you in a minute, because I want people to know the song that you wrote. But Marsha, are you finished?
I designed a breastfeeding poster because I was extremely upset about Nestle's promoting infant formula for poor women around the world, or any women for that matter, because it's always breast is best. I had done a very popular commercial for Lux soap in Nigeria. I decided to have my own breastfeeding poster. In the commercial, my name was Susie Martins, and I was supposed to be living this rich lifestyle with being whisked away in a white Lamborghini and singing to integrated audiences. And I had this Caucasian servant. Susie Martins doing a breastfeeding commercial poster would be very powerful for these women because they were promoting that, oh, modern women don't breastfeed. So I designed the poster and then I donated it to UNICEF. They sent the poster all around the world to promote breastfeeding. Then the New York State Department of Health contacted me and asked me if they could put it in all these clinics in New York State. And here it is, my children are now grown, but the poster has still survived in certain places because even one of my daughter-in-laws said to me, she went to Columbia Presbyterian Hospital and she looked up and she said, "Oh my God, there's my mother-in-law."
I put a picture of it on the webpage for Marsha. I made a family tree and there's pages about all of us, connection there.
I was on the board of the New York Metro Committee for UNICEF for many years, and I was on the board of the Girl Scouts, and I have my own not-for-profit organization called For Our Children's Sake, and over the years, I've taken young people to Africa, and it's been incredible. It's been incredible. As a matter of fact, I'm preparing some barrels right now to send to Sierra Leone. I became a teacher after I left showbiz and taught high school history until my retirement. Thank God that my mom worked at the United Nations when we were little, and she would get invitations to go to opening independence celebrations. And she'd always say, "Oh, I have to bring my daughters with me." So we ended up going to Africa when we were children. That's why I just developed an incredible love for the continent, for the motherland. They were all Pan-Africanists. My mother also worked for the Rosenbergs, who got executed for being communists. We're always around people of great note, I'm sure Lorelei and Durka have pictures of my father with all kinds of stars in Hollywood. That kind of family, we were always there in the mix with the rich and famous.
My mother was laughing because she said so many people ask her, how does she get to know all of these famous people? She said that the reason was is that she would get invited to many events and she would be the only person of color there. She said people would strike up conversations with her on the food line when you're waiting to get food at these events. They would find her so interesting. They would keep in touch with her over the years. As a matter of fact, Marcia and I have always been in horror buffs. I get so upset now because years ago we joined the science fiction book club and part of the membership, they gave you a ticket to the first commercial flight to the moon. And I really wish we had still had those tickets. But my mother came home from an event one day and she used to laugh because when I was younger and anyone would ask me where I was from, I would always say the Twilight Zone.
The kids in the neighborhood believed us because we would go on these trips with my mom to Africa. So they didn't see us for months. We went and we just returned.
One day my mother comes home from a party and she's telling Marcia and I, oh, I'm so sick and tired of these white men always chasing me. And she said, because it was this one guy, she said, in every party, he's at every party lately and he won't leave me alone. And he keeps chasing me around. And she said, and they keep telling me he's somebody, but I don't know who he is. And we said, well, what's his name? Rod Serling.
Now I want to get through letting each one of you all talk. And then I have some questions. Dana, I'd like for you to talk about yourself.
But that's also because of, as Marcia did, I also, whenever I was not performing, I was in education. I taught at Adelphi University for many years. I was bought away from Adelphi University, where I had headed up, I was their library liaison for the African American students. But Arthur Mitchell came out to perform out at Adelphi, and they hired me away from there. So I ended up teaching at the Dance Theater of Harlem for many years. I taught Dunham Technique and I taught mime. Now, I didn't really want to teach mime, but I studied mime with a gentleman who had studied directly with Marcel Marceau. So I was a very good mime artist and it was very amusing because the class of mime that I taught at Dance Theater of Harlem, some people from Cirque du Soleil came, hired my entire class and took them to Las Vegas. They were doing some show called Black Angels. Yeah, that was very exciting. Now, I said that a lot of my entertainment career was due to my sister Marcia, because Marcia was always looking out when something would come up. Now, you mentioned about a song that I wrote.
Yes, the song.
And fortunately, to this day, I'm still getting royalty checks from that song. So that's a very good thing. But that happened by chance because Marcia and I were visiting her good friend and fellow model at that time, Grace Jones. Grace was getting ready to go down to Compass Point to record an album. She was very upset because her babysitter had just quit. She said, how is she going to do this? She had her young son.
Who happens to be my godson.
It was January, and since I was teaching at a university at the time, we always have January off for our winter break. And I had just had my daughter, who was just about the same age as Grace's son. So I told Grace, I'm off for the whole month of January. I'll go down with you, and I'll take care of the babies, and you can record the music. So we went down to the Bahamas, and I lived with Grace during that time. Chris Blackwell was the producer of her album. And he had this beautiful sauna in a cave on the beach in the Bahamas. So we're sitting there in the sauna. And I just happened to say to Grace, I wrote a song. I had been teaching at Adelphi. And that day there was some blockage on the highway. So I had to get off at East 42nd Street and drive cross town to West 42nd Street. So by the time I had been teaching dance all day, and by the time I got into my garage, I was too tired to get out of the car. And I was sitting there and I'm like, you can't just sit here vegging out. And it was like, as soon as I said that, that's why I said it's about spirit. Because as soon as I said that, this song came to me. I was sitting in the garage and there was a sign on the wall that says, pull up to bumper. I really sat there. I had, at that time we had Walkman. And the song just came to me. I sang it into my Walkman. I went and I copywrote the song. And it was like a year later that I was in that sauna there with Grace. And she said, sing me this song that you wrote. And as soon as I sang it to her, she said, that's the most fantastic song. I have to tell you, this is what's funny when I talk about spirit, because I didn't know that much about the music industry at that time. And I was really willing to sell her the song just outright.
That would have been horrible.
But when I got home, she said, have your lawyers call my lawyers. So my lawyer started calling, and her lawyer never returned the call. And next thing I heard it on the radio, they hadn't made any legal arrangements with me. My lawyer finally said, look, I keep calling. Their lawyers are not returning my call. So I'm going to send you to Martin Silfen, who taught music law. All of the music lawyers in New York had studied with Martin Silfen. So I went to him and he said, that song's climbing up the charts. He said, and you have sheet music on that song. So even if someone did it as a jazz tune, they've got to pay you. So he said, don't say anything until it gets to number one. It's very interesting how things turn out, because of course they had to end up making arrangements with me. I didn't want to be greedy because I was very happy that Grace did the song. So I ended up sharing the publishing with she and Sly and Robbie. So I'm still getting royalties. Some years later, I'm at a travel agency event with my mother, and it's on a yacht, and there are all sorts of tables there and all sorts of places to sit. And I see these two little white women sitting in the corner. So I told my mother, let's go sit with those women. And she said, what's wrong with you? Look at all this space here. What do you want? I said, I don't know. My spirit's telling me to sit with those women. So we go over and we sit with these women. We start talking, and one of them happens to say, oh yes, my husband is a music attorney. And oh, he had this client, Grace Jones. She says, yes, but that was some of the most horrible years of our life because he got all caught up in drugs.
Oh no.
Yes, he was strung out on drugs at the time. Oh. That's what I say. It's so funny because we're in that time where things are often revealed to you at the most unusual times. I used to babysit Lorelai so many times when she was little. And I don't even know if she remembers when we even went to Cape Cod. We used to go to Wellfleet, Massachusetts. And Lorelai was such a little naughty girl. She was always running around. She'd hit people. She would kick people. And when they left me with her to babysit for a while, I would take a cap full of wine and put it in her bottle.
Yeah, it's funny because Lorelai was really nasty when we were kids. And then now she's all polite and nice. And
I was just getting ready to say, your image that I'm looking at, you are so cool, calm, and collected.
But at the same time, at that time, she was my favorite because she was always getting into so much. And I just thought it was hilarious. It was like watching a show. But when she started singing, I was friends with Nile Rodgers at the time. I was able to introduce her to Nile Rodgers. He produced a whole bunch of songs for her. And that was a wonderful thing. Lorelai and Durga are phenomenal singers. Just phenomenal singers that thrill us every time we watch them.
As a matter of fact, I've been telling everybody to go to YouTube and tune into Black Floyd and see their incredible video, Wish You Were Here. I just adore that. The research that you guys went through to put that video together is really phenomenal. Everybody should go to Black Floyd and see the video that Lorelai and Durga put together.
I have to say that Dana's introducing me to Nile introduced me to a whole world of the best level of professionalism that I could have been exposed to. And I feel that's been one of the greatest benefits as far as my exposure to in the music business is I was able to meet people like Nile and other musicians that were just the A-level people from when I was a novice. And then they took me under their wing and Nile gave me session work. And eventually we did make a record together. But being able to meet people who are A-level professionals, it's just a completely different feeling. They're not insecure. So they're not competing with you. They've already proven themselves and they tend to be more available to teach. And Nile taught me a lot of things about the importance of having a certain image, how you interact with the public and your fans, how you interact with the people in the record company, and so many great things because we spent a lot of time together. And I will always appreciate Dana for introducing me to Nile and giving me that opportunity to be able to work with him. He cut songs on other people for me. He hooked me up with Philip Bailey from Earth, Wind, and Fire. I wrote something that Sister Sledge recorded that he did for me.
I wanted to bring in something else because it's so wonderful, Sisters Helping Sisters. Another wonderful opportunity that Marcia presented to me was a movie that I did with Gordon Parks, a film called Lead Belly.
I remember Lead Belly. Yeah.
Roger Mosley. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So not only was I in the film, but I got the opportunity to choreograph the film as well. And my association with Gordon Parks was one of the most wonderful things. And the funny thing was that Gordon gave that script to Marcia. And Marcia read the script and read the character and said, "This is my sister."
Yeah. It's nice to have sisters with different personalities that you could throw off things to.
When I went to the audition, I just went in to read for the character. I did my reading and Gordon told me to wait out in the room with all the other actors who were there. All of a sudden, and listen, those were the days when everybody were quite risque. We were all wearing see-through clothing. And I had on a t-shirt dress that went down to my ankles, but I had nothing else on underneath it. Gordon came out and he comes over to me and he says, "All these other actors are telling me what a great choreographer you are." He said, "Would you mind choreographing something for me right now?" And I'm like, okay. Art Evans, who played Blind Lemon Jefferson in that film with Roger Mosley in Lead Belly. Art had his guitar and he said, "Go in that other room and work out something with her." I went in the room with Art and I choreographed a little piece and I came out and I danced up a storm for Gordon. He said, "You have the job. You're the choreographer for this movie."
Let me ask you, is this Gordon Parks or yes. Junior?
Senior. I always used to call him our Black Hugh Hefner because he had so many women in his life and he was so wonderful. One of the things I said, if I had my druthers, I'd start a finishing school for young African-Americans because Gordon would have parties and he could invite all of his wives and all his former, because he knew how to treat women so well. I remember he took me while we were doing the filming of Lead Belly. He took me out to dinner one night and just as part of the conversation, he was asking me what kind of wine did I like? And we had our dinner. I went home and he went home. The next morning, early in the morning, my doorbell rings. I open it up and there's a gentleman delivering an entire case of the wine that I told him I liked. Yes, wow. That's the kind of gentleman that he was. And he was a gentleman. He just knew so much and taught me so much because the day that we had to shoot the dance sequences of Lead Belly, and this is a Paramount film, full feature film, Bruce Surtees was the cameraman. And I'm waiting for Gordon. He said, "No, you're the choreographer. This is your day. I want you to direct this entire day."
All right.
So I got to direct a whole 2 days of a feature film for Paramount Pictures. That was an incredible opportunity. And he also was very particular about all of the actors. I had one scene on horseback with Roger, but Gordon didn't let us just do that one scene. Because we had this one scene, he had the studio give us all riding lessons. So that was another great thing through Gordon Parks. I got riding lessons. I was acting with a phenomenal cast. And people don't know that Gordon Parks Sr. was also fashion editor for Vogue magazine. So when we had to do the costume design for Lead Belly, he came to every costume fitting. He wanted all the clothing authentic to the period. And even myself as choreographer, it was really great because since it was a period film, I did a lot of research to find out what type of dance they were doing at that particular time in history. And I remember they sent me to a hairdresser who was doing my hair. And I was telling them that I was doing this choreography. And they said, "Oh, was that supposed to be in Sweetport, Louisiana?" And I said, "Yes." She said, "Damn, my granddaddy's from Sweetport and my granddaddy's 90 years old and my granddaddy can still dance. I'll go set up a meeting with you and my granddaddy." The grandfather came and did some dances for me. So really between the Dunham technique, because Dunham didn't just do her Haitian and Afro-Caribbean, she also did jazz and black bottom and all the dances of the period. So any dance that you see in Lead Belly, now they only have the one big dance sequence up at the top of the film, but those were actually two dance sequences that they put together because when Gordon finished cutting the film, I think it was like 4 hours long. So they cut them down. But Harry Howard, who I also have to mention, Harry Howard was the film editor. He and my husband, Franklin Mano, were the first African-Americans in the Film Editors Union. My mom, again, came into play. Franklin was trying to get a job, and they kept telling him, he's not in the union. And my mother, a friend of my mother's, was head of United Artists at that time. And she called him, and he wrote a letter for Franklin. Franklin got an interview, and he got into the Film Editors Union. Then he wanted to work at CBS. And every time he called, they'd say, oh, sorry, you're not here. So I told Franklin, I said, next time you call, I said, there's a pay phone booth right on the corner of CBS. So you call from that pay phone booth. And if they tell you, if you could only be there now, tell them I can be there now. And so they ended up hiring him, and he worked at CBS for over 30 years until he retired. He was also a film editor. He was the assistant editor with Harry Howard on Shaft. And he also edited a film for Woody King. You mentioned Woody King, that first movie that Woody King did, History of the Black Theater Movement. Yes. That was my husband, Franklin Mano, who edited that film and put that film together. Woody came to him with a script, and Franklin threw the script in the trash can and told him, Woody, just leave me the footage and go away and I'll make a movie.
There's so many different facets to all of us, but I did want to get this down, that I coordinated a week of cultural events for the United Nations when they had their special session on Africa. And it was really quite remarkable. I worked with the committee, but it was so great to have us presented, African people in the diaspora. And I coordinated all kinds of events at the United Nations, featuring Caribbean poets. We brought over an African filmmaker who is one of the most famous African filmmakers, Ousmane Sembène, and showed one of his films at the United Nations. And it was just an incredible experience.
Oh, so full of history.
We're very blessed. I also have a foundation called PAGA, which is called Passing Ancestral Knowledge Along. We've done dance and theater and film. As a result, I actually directed a play that was at the United Nations in the Dag Hammarskjöld Theater that was on HIV/AIDS, called St. Mark's Place. It was so well received. So we've had this long-running relationship with the United Nations.
I did a Blues for Mr. Charlie.
You did that with me on 42nd Street, my 42nd Street Repertory mm-hmm. Theater. Yes.
Exactly. Also, I toured with Ellen Stewart from the LaMama Theater from East 4th, and we toured all across Europe doing dances from the original Cotton Club.
Now you come to Durga and Lorelei.
Next week, part 2, Lorelei and Durga, the McBroom Sisters. Thank you for tuning in this week. Hope you enjoyed this show about stuff. See you next time.
The Break Store. Unique branded gifts for the holidays, birthdays, or just because. Visit us at www.thebreakstore.com. Hit the right black get in touch button.